Yashodanandana Vrajajanaranjana Samunapira
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Prabhupada, Paramahamsa, Parivagacharya, Sarasat, Sivan Grace, A.C. Bhaktivinoda, Swami Prabhupada Ki, Ananda Kuti Vaishnavinda Ki, Iskon Phongda Chara Srila Prabhupada Ki, Jai Namachara Srila Haridas Thakur Jai. Premsi Kaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Deita Garada, Sri Vasudhi Gaurava Bhakti. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees. Glories to Shishi Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Canto 2, Chapter 1. We don't have it here, right? Hitam nirpa, Atma vit samata pumsam, Shotavya dishuya paraha, Variyaneshati pragna, Krito loka hitam nirpa. Atma vit samata pumsam.
Atma vit samata pumsam.
Shotavya dishuya paraha.
Shotavya dishuya paraha.
Variyane shate prashna.
Variyane shate prashna.
Kritolo kahitam nipa.
Kritolo kahitam nipa.
Atma vit samata pumsam.
Shate Prajna Krito Loka Hitam Nipa Atma Vit Samata Pumsam Shata Vya Dishuya Paraha Loka hitam ripa Atma vit samata pumsam Shota vyadi shuya paraha Madhuji Vayaneshate prajna Kripa loka hitam ripa Atma vit samata pumsam Shota vyadi shuya paraha Variyane shate prashna Krito loka hitam nipa Atma vit samata pumsam Shota vyadi shuya paraha Variyane shite prajna Krita loka hitam Atma vipsamata pumsam. Shota vyadi shriyapara. Okay, we have to also do the invocation. So, before I go on to the translation, I'll go over to the invocation and then I come back over here. Okay, the fourth step in God realization, invocation. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Translation and purport by Divine Grace. O my Lord, the all-pervading personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Purport. Vasudeva means to Krishna, the son of Vasudeva. Since by chanting the name of Krishna, Vasudev, one can achieve all the good results of charity, austerity, and penances, it is to be understood that by the chanting of this mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, the author, the speaker, or any one of the readers of Srimad Bhagavatam is offering respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Lord, Krishna, the reservoir of all pleasure. In the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the principles of creation are described, and thus the first canto may be called creation. Similarly, in the second canto, the post-creation cosmic manifestation is described. The different planetary systems are described in the second canto as different parts of the universal body of the Lord. For this reason, the second canto may be called the cosmic manifestation. There are 10 chapters in the second canto, and these 10 chapters, the purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam and the different symptoms of this purpose are narrated. The first chapter describes the glories of chanting, and it hints at the process by which the neophyte devotees may perform meditation in the universal form of the Lord. In the first verse, Sugriva Goswami replies to the questions of Maharaj Parikshit, who asked him about one's duties at the point of death. Maharaj Parikshit was glad to receive Sukadeva Goswami, and he was proud of being a descendant of Arjuna, the intimate friend of Krishna. Personally, he was very humble and meek, but he expressed his gladness that Lord Krishna was very kind to his grandfathers, the sons of Pandu, especially his own grandfather Arjuna. And because Lord Krishna was always pleased with Maharaj Parikshit's family, at the verge of Maharaj Parikshit's death, Sukadeva Goswami was sent to help him in the process of self-realization. Maharaj Parikshit was a devotee of Lord Krishna from his childhood, so he had natural affection for Krishna. Sukadeva Goswami could understand his devotion. Therefore, he welcomed the questions about the king's duty. Because the king hinted that worship of Lord Krishna is the ultimate function of every living entity, Sukadeva Goswami welcomed the suggestion and said, because you have raised questions about Krishna, your question is most glorious. The translation of the verse is as follows. So now we go to the translation. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, my dear king, your question is glorious because it is very beneficial to all kinds of people. The answer to this question is the prime subject matter for hearing, and it is approved by all transcendentalists. Purport? Even the very question is so nice that it is the best subject matter for hearing. Simply by such questioning and hearing, one can achieve the highest perfectional stage of life. Because Lord Krishna is the original Supreme Person, any question about him is original and perfect. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that the highest perfection of life is to achieve the transcendental loving service of Krishna. Because questions and answers about Krishna elevate one to the transcendental position, the questions of Maharaj Parikshit about Krishna philosophy are greatly glorified. Maharaj Parikshit wanted to observe his mind completely in Krishna, and such absorption can be effected simply by hearing about the uncommon activities of Krishna. For instance, in the Bhagavad Gita, it is stated that simply by understanding the transcendental nature of Lord Krishna's appearance, disappearance, and activities, one can immediately return home back to Godhead and never come back to this miserable condition of material existence. It is very auspicious, therefore, to hear always about Krishna. So Maharaj Parikshit requested Sukadeva Goswami to narrate the activities of Krishna so that he could engage his mind in Krishna. The activities of Krishna are no different from Krishna himself. As long as one is engaged in hearing such transcendental activities of Krishna, he remains aloof from the conditional life of material existence. The topics of Lord Krishna are so auspicious that they purify the speaker, the hearer, and the inquirer. They are compared to the Ganges waters, which flow from the toe of Lord Krishna. Wherever the Ganges waters go, they purify the land and the person who bathes in them. Similarly, Krishna Katha, or the topics of Krishna, are so pure that wherever they are spoken, the place, the hearer, the inquirer, the speaker, and all concerned become purified. Om Gyana Timrasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Sakshimantamina Tasmai Shri Garbhe Namaha Shri Chaitanya Namobishtam Stapna Yena Bhutade Swayam Rupa Karamayam Dadadi Svapadanti Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Daita Gadada Shri Vasudhi Gaurava Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Yesterday when I got the message that this devotee was in intensive care, I was really shocked because he was a big, strong devotee, healthy, and suddenly, you know, in Guyana, he was my good friend, and suddenly he was... Up to now, we don't know exactly what happened to him, really, and I guess you all have chanted for him. So, life is tottering like a drop of water on a lotus petal. I would like to beg the devotees' forgiveness for any offense I may cause at their feet. We may have philosophical disagreements sometimes, or minor philosophical disagreements, but it should not be a need to be upset about or develop any animosity towards one another. So this verse here is very interesting. Sukadeva Goswami is glorifying Maharaj Parikshit's question. He states that it is the best of questions. And the question was, what should one hear, what should one chant, and what should one remember in his life? And especially when he's about to die. And this is the question for all humanity, or actually all living entities. This is the question. But unfortunately, because 8 million species are within the mode of ignorance, they cannot ask this question. But at least in the human platform, they should ask these questions. What one should hear, what one should chant, what one should remember. In the animals, you're hearing them already, you're hearing the birds, and so as soon as they're up, they're asking, where is food? Where's shelter? Where's mate? And how can I defend? This is the four principles of material life, the basic principles. And as soon as the animals are up, these are the questions they are asking. The lion may be asking, what animal can I kill today? Or the tiger, or the deer might be saying, where is the best grass can I get today? So these propensities, are there. And even though we should rise above them, but for somehow, because we've been covered by the illusory energy, then these are the basic questions. Even in humanity also, most of the human beings, these are the questions they are asking also, but in a more polished way. Instead of food, they might be asking what type of food and so forth. And in the other, on the other fields, in terms of house, in terms of mating, defending, so many things are there. What type of clothes can I wear? What type of shoes, what type of this, that. So the whole society is pervaded with this, with these types of questions. And so they left little room for the important questions of life. Little room is left for that when we are engaged mostly in these types of questions. And within the Srimad Bhagavatam, Sukadeva Goswami would be heavy here. The lifetime, those persons who are materially engrossed, being blind to the knowledge of ultimate truth, have many subject matters for hearing in human society, O Emperor. The lifetime of such an envious household is passed in night, either in sleeping or in sex indulgence, and the daytime either in making money or maintaining family members. Persons devoid of atma-tattva do not inquire into the problems of life, being too attached to the fallible soldiers like the body, children and wife. Although sufficiently experienced, they still do not see their inevitable destruction. So Sukadeva Goswami is really heavy here. You know, and he's just a young boy, 16 years old, no experience of family life. Yet he's speaking like, well, of course, he's a great Mahabhagavata. See? He's speaking such powerful words. And these words would resonate in our mind forever. So, I also are faced with a lot of questions during my preaching. So many questions people are asking. But because today the world has been divided between science and religion, then at least half the world, or even more than half the world, have questions of different nature. They have more scientific questions. They are concerned, is there a soul? Is there a God? Is there reincarnation? They are being caught up with all these other trivial questions that they have not even come to the stage of understanding that there is a supreme control or a supreme creator. So even within my preaching, I'm faced with so much of these type of questions. Maybe I'll find a few examples. And I'm thinking, okay, here is one. Who studies the origin and development of humans? This question is being posed to me. And I'm answering. The anthropologists, the archaeologists, paleontologists, microbiologists. They are doing a poor job and are misleading the world into atheism. They have totally misread their finds and are giving a wrong interpretation about the origin of humans and their development. It's reincarnation pseudoscience all the time. Reincarnation is beyond the experience of science. Reincarnation is beyond the experiments of science. Science is limited to this material plane, and reincarnation is on the metaphysical realm. So how can science fathom it? This process can only be perceived through yogic practice, no other way. These dumb scientists give the impression that they can explain everything through the laws of physics, but they are just bluffing. They don't know what is life, nor can they create one, nor do they know how it has originated. Yet they are quick to fool the world how life came about, and most of the world accept this blindly. See? But these types of questions are surfacing so much, you know, that sometimes you wonder what is why people are so influenced. And so I did a little research, and I realized that 75% of the topmost scientists believe in the Big Bang theory. And and evolution and abiogenesis. These are the original theory. So within the first canto, it speaks about creation here. The first canto speaks about creation, and our version of creation is much, much different from the scientific version. Maybe I would like to touch upon that a little bit, and then we can look at what the scientific version says and see how they differ. Srila Prabhupada states that the first canto should be called creation and the second canto post-creation. And our understanding is that when material creation takes place, there is Mahatattva in a part of the universe, and then Lord Vishnu, from his pores come innumerable universes. Then within each universe, in his expansion is Garbhodakashaya Vishnu. Well, Lord Krishna's three expansion is Karnadakashaya Vishnu, Garbhodakashaya Vishnu, and Kishoradakashaya Vishnu. In his expansion is Garbhodakashaya Vishnu, he enters each universe. And from his navel springs the lotus flower, and then the Brahma comes forth there. And this Brahma, he would put all the planets to motion, and then he would create life. The explanation of how life came about is, first the Kumars were created, then Lord Shiva, then his 10 mind-born sons, then Shatarupa and Swayambhuva Manu. And these are considered the progenitors of mankind. These are the progenitors of mankind. And then later on Kashyapa would came from the daughters of, from the wife of Kashyapa and the daughters of Kashyapa came all the species of life. So I'm being bombarded with these kinds of questions all the time. How mankind came? How life came about? How this came about? All the time. And so it is essential that we know the process through Srimad Bhagavatam. From the scientific perspective, they have a different view altogether. And for them, they can swear by that, really, because, like I'm saying, these are the top scientists of the world, at least 75% of them. Sometimes I look at their scientific fairs and so that they have, and then you have these great scientists, they're speaking there. And they would ridicule the religionists like you'd be surprised, you know, how their concept is that there is no need to even mention God in the origin of the universe. So here's what their concept is. Matter was in a condensed form, and then suddenly there was a big expansion and explosion called the Big Bang. And then all matter exploded, and then it coalesced or come together and form planets. This is their understanding. And would you believe me that at least 50 to 60% of the world accept this concept today? So we're in for some serious debate. So that is their concept of the origin of the universe. But not only that. They have made something called the Hadron Collider in Europe, in France and Switzerland. It's 17 miles long. And they're trying to replicate the Big Bang there. They're trying to understand the Big Bang's origin. And this whole setup costs at least $6 billion, but with the scientists payload and everything, about $10 billion. So right now what they do, they're colliding protons. They divide the atom into different parts, and so they're colliding protons at a high speed, almost the speed of light. And this is expected to produce a simulation of Big Bang. So you can imagine this, and this is being taught in the world right now, in the textbook and everything. So this is their understanding. Presently, they stated that they can see 45 billion light years away. You know what's 45 billion light years? One light year is 5 trillion miles. One light year is 5 trillion miles. So 45 billion light years is like, I'm going to see if I have the number. It's sextillion. It's called sextillion years. One sextillion years has 21 zeros at the back of it. See? And so that is the distance the scientists can see right now with their Hubble telescope. That's a distance we cannot even fathom or dream about. So I mean, we cannot dispute that, but the contention is, if we have so many billions of universes, it means then that these universes are transparent to able to see planets at that distance. Because within our description, the universe are being described as being covered in 7 layers of matter. So if we're in one universe, it'd be difficult for us to see through that universe. And when Lord Chaitanya was preaching to Sanatan Goswami, he said that one universe is 4,000 million miles across. That is the diameter of a universe. That 4,000 million miles means 4 billion. That's 4 billion miles. But that is the diameter of our solar system. So is our solar system the one universe? We have to think about it. Because it's also stated, around the solar system is what you call the Oort clouds. Not E-A-R-T-H, O-O-R-T-H, Oort cloud. And that is like a thick covering over the solar system. So who could tell? Can that could possibly be the shell of the universe? See, but whatever it is, really, So they're also claiming that they can be able to see how planets are destroyed and recreated back from their vision, from their telescopic vision. So many other things. So with all these scientific claims, then a lot of the world are get carried away by this kind of stuff. See? But for me, I rebuff it. I said that the scientists are simply fooling the world. That the Earth is not 13.5 billion years, but is 155 trillion years. And how did I get that figure? We know that the age of the universe is based on the age of Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma is 155 trillion years. So that's our conception, really. Let them refute it, really. Let them refute that. See? So that's the origin of the universe in a scientific perspective. When it comes to life, their concept is that they have three fundamental theories. One theory is called abiogenesis. Another theory is called the ocean vent theory, and then another one is called the primordial soup theory. They felt that 14.5 billion years, the situation was quite different for life to appear. Everything was in perfect harmony for unicells or a one cellular organism to appear. And then from that, it multiplied to two cells, three cells. And so that's how life came about. That's their concept. And then in terms of how the species came about, their explanation is that everything gradually evolved. And through the process of evolution, all the life, and they are so convinced of these theories. I mean, when I'm answering questions online, sometimes some of them guys would want to kill you how they're so convinced about these findings. But then I would simply refute it also. I also refute the evolutionary theory. I said indeed that there are genetic changes, but the changes are not meant to create new species, but they are just simply meant to create smaller species. That's one. And in terms of ocean vent and abiogenesis, prove it. Try to create one life. Up to now, they cannot create one life. So these are the challenges our creationist has to face with the scientists today. And because this has been taught in school, then all the students are being taught this thing, and all of them. So most of the questions, they are simply asking these kind of questions. Constantly, you've been bombarded by these questions. What do you think about evolution? What do you think about abiogenesis? What do you think about ocean vents? So many things, see? And so we have to prepare to be able to refute these theories. So these are some of the questions that been bombarding humanity. And then gradually the world, it stated after this 10,000 years, of this Krishna consciousness movement, everything would deteriorate rapidly. People would not even believe in God. Even now, I mean, there's such a great amount of atheists that you would be shocked with, especially in Europe, in the European countries, the amount of atheists that are there. That's something. So we're faced with these, and then we have to learn to deal with them. And this is the part about creation. So coming back to what should we hear and what should we What should we recite and what should we remember? So what Bhagavatam says, Tasmadikena manasa bhagavan sattvatam patihi shrotavya kirti tavyascha dheya pujascha nityada. Therefore, with one-pointed attention, one should constantly hear about, glorify, remember, and worship the personality of Godhead, who is the protector of the devotee. So this is the answer to Sukadev Goswami's Parikshit question. With one-pointed attention, one should constantly hear about, glorify, remember, and worship the personality of Godhead, who is the protector of the devotee. Yad anudasina yuktaha karma granti nibandana chindanti kovidasatasya kona kuryat kataratim. With sword in hand, intelligent men cut through the binding knots of reactionary war, karma, by remembering the personality of Godhead. Therefore, who will not pay attention to his message? Shushrusho shadadhanasya vasudeva kataruchi Sian Mahat Sivaya Vipra Punya Tirta Nishevana. O twice born sages, by serving the devotees who are completely free from all vices, great service is done. By such service one gains affinity for hearing the messages of Vasudeva. Shrinvatam Swa Kata Krishna Punya Shavana Kirtana. Krishna, who is in everyone's heart, cleanses the desire for material enjoyment from the devotee who has developed the urge to hear his message, which are virtuous when heard and chanted. Na yat chitra param hare yashyo jagat pavitam jagrinita karhisi. Those words which do not describe the glories of the Lord are considered to be a place of pilgrimage for crows. On the other hand, that literature which is full of the description of the name, fame, form, pastimes of the Lord is a different creation, meant to bring about a revolution in the impious lives of this world misdirected civilization. Bring about a revolution in the impious lives of this world misdirected civilization. And this is what is happening today, the impious lives of the misdirected civilization. So, this is our solution. And we have to stick to the path seriously and preach seriously, so that we can enlighten to the world to come to this form of questioning. What one should do, what one should hear, and what one should remember. For these are the fundamental questions of life for all of us and all humanity. I'll stop here if there's any comment or question. Actually, maybe before that, there was one last point really that was made about the Ganges, and it stated that the pastimes of the Lord are as purified as the Ganges water. The Ganges water is very purifying. We know it because it touches the toe of the Lord. It's very purifying, and wherever it goes, it purifies the land and purifies one who takes bath in it. See, so similarly, the message of the Lord and the pastimes of the Lord, when we hear it, it's also very purifying, actually more purifying than the Ganges. Okay, so I'll stop here and I'll take any comment or question. Yes, Prabhuji?
So it says that this universe is 4 billion miles
across.
In diameter,
yes.
4 billion. And also it's covered by a layer of earth. Of course, we know the earth.
Seven
water,
layers of matter.
Earth, water, fire, air, ether.
Fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego. So if it's covered with a layer of earth first, then you can't see out of it. So when they say they're seeing so many millions of light years away, or so many light years away, they're saying, they're mostly speculating and word juggling, and we can't take their numbers are not valid, because what they're seeing is the planets in this universe, which is many, of course, we know that, so many. So, and then they speculate about their exploding, crashing protons and neutrons and electrons and all these things they're doing.
Of course.
They're saying that everything came from a little point, which is, you know, that's just speculation. It's not logical either.
But let us look at it this way. Like it's stated that the planets, the universes are coming out of Lord Vishnu's pores in little specks of sweat, and then
yes,
it expands. So I was thinking, it seems to have a little similarity, you know, because these planets are expanding. And,
of course, and, there's a similarity, of course.
You know, and the expansion, but we cannot really agree with their concept. And in terms of seeing such a long way, I mean, we cannot refute that, because they're seeing it with the Hubble telescope, which is, you know,
refute. They can see, but it's inside this universe.
Well, yeah, that's my contention also. How is it possible to see that distance? Our universe is not
so many.
Listen, our universe is not 45 billion light years away. I mean, made that claim.
This light year is also made up.
Huh?
This light year thing is also made up.
No. I mean, the light years is accurate.
No?
Light years is accurate.
I know, but they make it up. They say a number.
That's not made up. Any other point or question, Maharaji?
You know,
she has a question there. No, but your points are well taken. I myself was surprised in terms of how they could be able to see.
So I just want to say that even Prabhupada used the term light years, so we can take it as a term. And then they can't even see the ocean of liquor, the ocean of milk, they can't see, scientists, which is so nearby compared to all those 8 billion trillion light years. It's so nearby, and they can't see that.
Yes, that is true. Actually, they're looking for water in the whole universe, and up to now they cannot find any planet with water. That's true, you know. I mean, but it's an interesting debate, really. We're looking at it. Yes, Mataji.
In the CC, Srila Prabhupada mentions, I forget exactly what he says, but something to the effect that it could be possible that the scientists might be able to communicate with Vaikuntha planets. I don't think he said reach, but I think he said communication with the Vaikuntha.
That is interesting. Yes, right now they're trying to send radio waves to different planets to get communication, see if any being is living anywhere, you know. But of course, there's a pool. My concept is that the life forms, the demigods and so, they're in another dimension. You know, Krishna has tricked us so much that it's not like, you know, we alone are able to see things. You know what I mean? It's beyond our capacity to see these life. Because we know that there's so much life out there. There are Gandharvas, Apsaras, Pitris, you know, Yakshas, Rakshas, everything. They're all there, really. But we cannot see them with our naked eyes, you see? Right, we're not able to see them unless they reveal themselves to us. So this is what's boggling scientists. So I always hit them because there's so much in the material concept. They cannot understand these things. You know?
Why are you worried if the scientists can understand these things or not?
Well, because they're influencing the world. And our point is, we want to influence the world with Krishna message. And their point is to influence the Lord with their message, really. So there's a little conflict.
But, okay. But what makes you think you actually understand their message? What makes you feel so confident you actually understand their message?
Oh, that, well, it's pretty basic, whatever it is. I used to teach biology, you know, so I...
Where did you teach it? At the University of Trinidad?
Forget about that, that's not so interesting now. But the point is, I have basic understanding in science, so I could understand the concepts, you know. It's not like I'm...
Okay, I'm sure they understand these things very expertly at the University of Trinidad when you taught there 20 years ago.
No, but our point is that we're trying to see where they're coming from and how we can refute their points, you know. That's the idea, you know. It's not, but it's, you know, it's not like you're going to try turn around and try to support them, you know what I mean? I'm not. Well, I'm not really criticizing them, but I'm refuting their theories, and that is what all devotees should be doing. But I do understand fully what their theories are. Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.